We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers.
Since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us this morning from the Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Department, we have Chief Mark McCluskey. How are you this morning?
Doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. So what all is new and anything big happen over the weekend?
Pretty quiet weekend. Nothing really major went on this weekend. Just our normal, ordinary calls.
It was nice out there. Man, like 71, 72 degrees.
Oh, I know. The weather was great. I enjoyed it myself. I did a few chores around the house outside this weekend.
I saw a lot of people grilling out. I even saw some business. They had a grill out back.
Oh, really?
I guess people are outdoors a whole lot more, which I guess could lead to more issues, more problems, everything.
Oh, yeah. And it's that time of the year. More people are out, more active. Of course, it's time of the year where you have some different type of accidents going on, you know, with what the people are doing out in the community.
I guess when you have more drivers out and about, more people on motorcycles, I mean, there's going to be more wrecks and accidents and everything.
Yes, for sure. Especially motorcycles, you know, they're hard to spot anyhow, and this weather brings them out. I noticed some out myself the other day when I was out.
That's always scary. Yeah, that was like the one thing that I never wanted my kids to own was a motorcycle.
Same here. Of course, when I was young, I had one. You was able to get your motorcycle license, I think, at 14 or 15.
Yep.
And my kids kind of talked about the same thing. It's like, no way I would let you drive in this town now. Wasn't near the population when I was 14.
Isn't it funny how the things we say no to are the things that we always did or had? Because I remember I probably went through 6 motorcycles by the time I was 20 or so.
Same here.
But I see the fun of it, but man, I did not want my kids. And of course, what happens? They all get one eventually at some point.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I think if we tell them no, it's like encouragement to do whatever it is.
That's like here. When I say no, here's some extra money to go get you one.
This is exactly how it unfolds. And it's interesting because today, you know, for a good several years, some of those smaller motorcycles, the smaller bikes got really popular, you know, the ones that are like 200 or below.
Yes, very. Then the moped age, I remember it.
Yeah. That's one I never really got into. I was more into the actual motorcycles.
Myself, a little too big for a moped. Yeah.
Can you imagine somebody like 6'2 or so, you know, riding? That's what I always thought to myself. There's no way I'll be seen on one of those. You know, no. I need a big motorcycle. The bigger, the better.
Yes.
But yeah, it seems like kids, for some reason, boys at least, you know, they tend to get a motorcycle at some point or another.
Yeah, I still actually got it in storage, still have the motorcycle I had in high school.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
You need to get that out.
I do. It's a 1970 model Harley Davidson 250.
Oh, wow. The Harleys were fun. You know, I had a Softail. I forgot what year it was. Now, it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I remember one time it broke down on me. I was like a mile away from home, and pushing it back home was enough to say, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
It's probably time to end it.
It's been a few years since I've had one. I bought my last new one I bought in 2000. I kept it for a few years, and I hadn't had one that I ride regular since then.
It's a lot of fun, but man, the accidents, especially accidents that you guys see firsthand, you're on the scene of them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and of course, on a motorcycle, you have no kind of protection, and usually accidents like that are a little bit more serious than just two vehicles.
What is the most common type of motorcycle accident you see? Is it where the rider will not negotiate a curve right, or is it when they get hit by a car because the car just didn't see them? What's most common?
Most of the time, it is a vehicle pulling out in front of them just because they don't see them. Now, we do see several, have seen some where people, first-time bike owners, not navigating the curves, like you said, too well and stuff like that, and having accidents on them.
You can always tell those newer riders. I saw one at a gas station, I guess it was yesterday, pulls up, parks right in front, you know, and when he gets off, he almost fell off. And you can just spot a new rider right away, and it's always interesting to me to find, especially when it's a guy who's like 35 to 45, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, this is my first bike, you know?
Yes.
And he buys the biggest one out there.
Yes, back when I used to ride quite a bit, we would have people ride in our group sometimes, like, it's the first one I've ever had, you know, and you could tell.
And you're like, I want to stay away from them.
Exactly.
Especially, I don't want to be in front of them. They never do stop in time. I've noticed that, too. You know, they'll lock up their brakes or something, mm-hmm. and just, they're scary.
Yes, very.
But anyway, so motorcycles, they're more out and about because of the nicer weather. In addition to that, what about drunk drivers? Are you seeing more accidents involving DUIs?
You know, I can't recall right offhand how many. We do have several. I say several. We have a few accidents due to drunk driving here. I don't have any statistics, but it stays pretty steady far as, of course, when the weather does get better, people do have a tendency to get out and have those barbecues and maybe do it like that. But not too often do we have drunk driving accidents, but it does happen.
I know we had a sheriff's sergeant on, and he was talking about how the majority of accidents they work that involve a DUI driver, it seems like the driver who's getting arrested for DUI, for the most part, may have cuts and bruises, but the person they hit, I mean, they've seen many fatalities like that.
Yes.
But the driver who's drunk does not get badly injured.
I have seen that often. It's with the alcohol in their system makes them more limber and, you know, don't have a tendency to break the bones and damage the body as much as it would if they were tensed up.
That would make it hard for me to be a first responder, because I'd be angry, you know, if I saw that.
I've worked my share of accidents that involve DUI, and I remember working one where the father was drunk and had his baby in the back seat. Had a pretty bad accident. Luckily, the baby was okay, and he was too. But just doing that with the kid in your car, you know, it happens often. Sometimes, you know, people just not thinking and do it.
When you see stuff like that, are they usually younger fathers, or are sometimes they, you know, 40s, 50s?
It's all ages. It's all ages.
It's wild because, you know, alcohol is one of those things that's legal in society. And people abuse it, you know. But we're starting to see more drivers who are, you know, intoxicated with drugs of some kind.
Yes.
and on the road, which is just as scary.
Yeah, I can remember we worked an accident. It was on the interstate. It wasn't a rollover, but anyhow, the accident, the driver and one of the passengers, they were acting like they had a head injury from the accident, the way they were responding. And come to find out, they had fentanyl patches on them.
Fentanyl patches, wow.
Yes, and that was what was making them that way. I think it was maybe the first time he'd used them, maybe put one or two extra on there, and it was basically not overdosing, but had them in a state to where we thought they had a head injury from the accident.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yes.
Because those are prescribed to, like, cancer patients, you know, end-of-life mm-hmm. patients, and that's
exactly.
Extremely strong.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even hear about that kind of stuff. That's wild.
I don't want to say that the drug issue is a big problem here in town, but there is several people that have dealings with drugs, you know, that need help. We sometimes you run into people that you wouldn't think that would even be on drugs, just certain people. This fentanyl changed the game several years ago because the quality of the drugs that the people are getting, if that fentanyl's in there, they're not used to that extra kick and they take too much and overdose. That's the reason there's so many overdoses now. A lot of people have this mentality thinking, oh, somebody overdosed. It was the first time they ever had taken drugs. It's not really like it. They have been taking drugs, and the drug of their choice that they're using may have the fentanyl in them, and this time cause them to overdose.
And that drug use, it totally changes a personality. I mean, depending on what they're using, to where that person, how they're acting, is totally unrecognizable from their day-to-day life.
Exactly. You're exactly right. It affects everybody differently. You know, it can make them violent, just out of their mind, do stuff that's just not normal.
When you work calls that involve, let's say, a mixture of drugs and mental illness, because those two go together often, you know, somebody who may be depressed, they may take more drugs than their counterpart, you know, it's common. But how do you go about working with a patient who may be mentally ill and high at the same time, and what types of things have you seen?
Well, you know, when you're working with someone like that, whether mentally ill or not, if they're on drugs, that's going to be our main priority, to stabilize the patient, you know, if they're having an overdose. The mentally ill, we have training in that to a certain point to do what needs to be done and do what we can do for them and try to get them help. And usually on that side of the issue, the police department is one that steps in and will carry them to wherever they need to go for the help as far as the mental issues.
And you've got a lot of calls. You work where police have to be called, or they are already on the scene.
Yes, of course, we have a centralized dispatch for police and fire together. So usually if an officer is available, they'll respond to all of our calls with us. You know, you just never know what you're getting into.
And by the way, our phone number, if you have any questions, 615-893-1450, and you can text those in. Again, 615-893-1450, and we're talking about issues going on throughout the city of Murfreesboro and just different things that Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue have worked. And we were talking off the air before you came on about how the first fireman fatality, actually two that occurred, and they occurred here in Murfreesboro how many years ago?
Yesterday was 87 years ago. It was our first fatalities within our department.
Those two firemen, were they together at the scene of a wreck? Where were they?
Yes, they actually responded to a fire and had a vehicle accident, and it took both of their lives. It was Winfrey Vong and A.C. Cartwright. So
I've heard that name before, A.C. Cartwright. I'm trying
yes.
to...
We have a memorial up on the square, a firefighter memorial. His name is on it, along with some others that have died in line of duty. But yes, we recognize them from time to time, share their legacy, you know, put it on our social media, and every few years we'll have on an anniversary date, we'll have something, and they're mentioned during our September 11th ceremonies we usually have.
So 87 years ago, how old was the fire department then? Because I don't really know when Murfreesboro Fire was formed.
Yeah, it was around, well, there's actually a couple of dates, but 1903, we were a fire brigade of volunteers. Then in 1903 is when we went to a full paid department.
That was a long time. I mean, the population back then of Murfreesboro, yes. 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000, I'm not sure.
Probably so. You know, the fire brigade was just the people in town. If you heard the bell going off, grab your bucket and come on.
So was it, when you initially opened, was there only one standing department where you had the fire trucks?
Here
in Murfreesboro?
When I first started, we had just opened our fifth station, which was, even though it was the fifth station, it was Station 6, and it was out on Memorial Boulevard, the sports comm station, the old house, McKnight Farm.
I remember that, yeah.
And that was the, well, it was a renovated old house, but that was the newest station then. Now we have a total of 11 stations and starting construction on Station 12 and have 13 and 14 in the laid out future, not anytime soon.
It's wild how much we've grown as a city. I mean, gosh, when you first started, maybe 20,000 residents or so?
Oh, yes, about that many. I couldn't remember being younger. I'm not sure what year it was, but it was during that time sometime where the residency was 14,000-something, so somewhere around that time.
And so you've been doing this for 41 years now. Or is it 42 this year?
41. I'm on my 40. I got 41 complete years. I'm working on 42 now.
That's a long time in a single career, which is cool because you've seen that growth firsthand. You've seen the development of new fire stations, of new neighborhood. I mean, all together. You've seen it all.
I have. You know, in not only the city, but the changes in the fire department, the way we were and how we are today, what we have become. You know how things have changed. From the day I started till now, it's a completely different department. You know, there. Of course, you always got the things that you do. You know, fires are still going to be fires; they don't change, but the way you fight them are different. You know, the protection that we wear. You know, when I first started here, we had one air pack on each truck and it stayed in a case. And my first day, it was just like, right here's the air pack. We don't never wear it. And now, you know, everybody has an air pack. You're not allowed within so many feet of a structure that's burning without the air pack. And back then we didn't know about what the smoke was really doing to us. You know, the atmosphere when you go in these conditions, Now we do. Cancer was not even a thing. You know, we know our turnout gear, it gets contaminated. You bring it back. And basically now, if you can smell it, it's got carcinogens in it. And I can remember it back years ago, you'd walk in the station first thing in the morning. You could just smell the station. It's like, oh, they had a fire last night, because you can smell it. Because everybody brought that stuff back into the station. We kept it in our bedroom with us. Now your turnout gear is not even allowed inside the building. I mean, it's just changed. That's just one of the things. And it's just changed so much over the years. Another thing, when I first started, we used to have about 1,500 calls a year. And, of course, all we were basically doing then were fire calls. Now we run over 2,000 calls a month. So it's been a lot of changes.
I know up until maybe it was the early 2000s, working as a fireman was one of the highest risk jobs for getting cancer. And I believe it was around the 2000s, maybe 2001 or so, that it started to change. And you saw those numbers decline, I guess, because you started figuring out scientifically what's causing this and why.
Exactly. There's several cancers that firemen are prone to. And we have this bill now that's passed by the state. That's a presumption bill on cancers called the Barry Brady Act, that some of the cancers that we get are covered under workman's comp. Yes, I know it's now that you see it, it's kind of like you've heard about it all these years. Now you're starting to see people get it. It's like myself, I got two spots right here on my shoulders that I have had removed. I know three other people had the same spots. And you don't think of it, it's from our suspenders.
Really?
From the smoke being in your suspenders sitting there on top of your shoulders would cause cancer. There's several, like, and it's just, some of it's just skin cancer. Some of it's gets more in detail and more involved in just skin cancer. But yes, it's very well known that all the smoke will cause a cancer, you know.
Wow. Again, Fire Chief Mark McCleskey with us this morning from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue. We had a couple of questions texted in. One was asking about the ISO rating, and then another was asking, it says, with Murfreesboro's continued residential and commercial growth, how is the department planning for future station placement? And I know you mentioned building new stations, mm-hmm. and one of those is on Veterans Parkway near 840.
Veterans, correct. As far as where we look to build stations, geographically, we like to have a 5-mile radius from a station, and that goes with the ISO question too, how we overlay them, where we're going to put them. And you get to a certain point, and we're looking into this, as a matter of fact, right now, keeping some data on it, to where your station, you have enough stations, but the in its territory gets very condensed with people, to where that one truck at that one station is running so much out of that station, it may be time to put another truck in with that station. And by saying that, what I mean is, like, we're tracking the calls now that we have, like, I'll just say engine 6 may be on a call, and that is close to 7 and 8's district. How many times is engine 7 or engine 8 having to come over in engine 6 district and leaving their district exposed with nobody in it to cover, because there's two calls going on in this district or three calls going on in this district? And, you know, so we're looking at that stuff, not only as far as placement of the stations, what type of equipment that you're putting in that station. We basically have about three or four different types of equipment. We have just a fire engine, which is needed in some places, and we have our ladder trucks. You'll see them with the ladders on top of them. They're usually a 75-foot ladder. Some of them do go up to 100 feet, and those are also figured in the ISO rating too. Then you look at certain types of ladder trucks that we need. We're looking right now maybe what they call a tiller. That is a bigger ladder that has more mobility because it steers from the rear, like a tractor and trailer, basically what it is, to get into these downtown areas or these apartments that are close quarters to where you need high-rise capability. And then also our rescue trucks that we use. And that's basically the types of trucks we use. We look and figure what kind of construction is going to be going on in that territory, which most of them do have just about all types. Of course, you can look at the downtown area is different than maybe Station 2, where it has residential and a lot of industrial. So we take all that in consideration on buying equipment and also placements of stations.
And that's something the average person just doesn't think about. I mean, because if you're in an industrial area, I guess you have to use different, not only equipment, but different types of spray foam versus water because you got different chemicals.
You know, that's just like Station 6. It has the airport in its district. It's more prone to have plane crash, you know, naturally close to the airport. You got District 3. It's mainly residential. A lot of old construction in that territory. Then you go out to Station 9 on Kaysen Lane. It has a little bit of everything. During the day, the population is more populated in that area because of the malls, the shopping centers, and everything that bring all the people in. So during the day, they're busy because more people in the area, but at night, they're slower. It's a lot of different things to look at.
I remember it was probably around, 95, 96, somewhere around that era where a small Cessna crashed in a neighborhood just before getting to the airport around MTCS school. But I remember it crashed and the neighbors went outside with a garden hose and they tried to hose the plane down because there were people in there who I think survived. At least one person survived out of that plane crash. But I remember fire department showed up and I don't know the outcome of all of it.
Was that the one where the plane was up in the tree still?
I think so.
Yeah. I don't remember the outcome, but I do remember, I believe that person did get burned pretty bad from that crash. The last one we had was over here right off of Greenland. Actually, Clark Boulevard come up to the back of it. Coming into land in Murfreesboro is lined up with the airport, but luckily, right there in that area over off of Clark Avenue, there's a field. He kind of tried to put it down there and come up into the bushes. There was three people on that plane, and all of them walked away from it. Very lucky.
Wow.
Yes.
It's always surprising when you hear about plane crashes and the people survive because you're talking about a major impact, of course, when they hit the ground. But it does amaze me when people survive those.
Mainly around here, we have smaller planes, and some of them have a little bit more of capability of gliding down than what you think of your big transport airplanes, you know, that come out of Nashville. Of course, they don't have as much gliding capabilities as a little Cessna that may have some.
Yeah, whenever you hear like a small jet that crashes, I mean, that such high speeds and then the altitude, there's usually no survivor with those.
Exactly. And, you know, just like down in Smyrna a few years ago with the Blue Angels.
Yeah.
That was a bad situation.
I guess a couple of years after that, or maybe it was right before that, there was a Lear jet and the person who was piloting the jet, I forgot how many hours he had, but not enough probably to be flying the jet alone. But but I remember he crashed into Percy Priest Lake.
Yes, I remember that one. Yeah, it was a few people on that jet. It was like real foggy, I believe, that morning.
Yeah.
That played a factor in it. So, yeah.
I know they later made a movie about one of the person's lives. Was it the Way Down movie?
Something
about a church in Franklin.
Out of Franklin, yes, I believe. That was the pastor and some of her staff, I believe, on that plane going on a trip when they had that accident flying out of Smyrna.
And her husband was the one who was the pilot. And I think some of her kids or something were on there with her going to
Florida. I believe you're right. It basically wiped out the whole family and several church members.
You know, I always had this underlying passion. I want to learn to fly. I would love to do that. But man, once you start looking at all the hours it takes.
Yes.
And then you look at some of the accidents, just like a motorcycle.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know.
It's I've always heard about flying a plane. It's the flying part's the easiest, knowing what to do when something happens, what you got to learn.
Yeah. But I don't think I'd ever want to fly a Lear jet or anything like that. I could see maybe a Cessna, you know, because they just feel like I could probably glide down if I needed to, but a jet, you know, you're going 600 miles an hour. You don't have time to make a decision.
No.
Anyway, so you guys work a huge variety of calls. I mean, everything from airplane crashes, house fires, to drug overdoses.
Yeah, we're an all-hazard department. Anything that, if someone dials 911, if police not needed, it's normally the fire department's coming. You know, from everything. And we're here for people. You know, sometimes it may not be an emergency, but somebody needs some help with something going on, maybe in their house, not sure what's going on. And we'll go out and check it out. Check on it for them and see what it is and help them out. I can remember some calls like that. Like, we had a lady calling one night, said her sprinkler system was going off in her house and she couldn't get it cut off. And Well, when we got there, it was her sprinkler system at her house, but it was in her yard, you know. And so we helped her out. You know, you just never know what you're going to get. And we do have, we make several, I say several, we have people that we go to that are very ill or having trouble and know that their life is not the best shape and they're not going to be with us too much longer. Instead of dialing 911, some of those people, our crews will work with them, say, hey, just call our station. We'll come over and help you get him up off the floor or whatever you may need. I think most crews out there, they got certain people they go check on, you know, especially after a fire, they go back and check on them and stuff. You know, we got a good group of men and women that work with us and very compassionate and stuff.
I know while we're growing like crazy, you still have fire departments within neighborhoods or neighborhood areas. And that being said, you do get to know the neighbors.
You do, yeah. I've seen several kids that live close to the fire department. This is kind of me, myself. They'll come over and visit, want to see the truck. Their parents will stop by and bring us cookies. You know, we're sorry, he bugs you. Now, they have grown up, and some work with us, and some have went to other departments. But it's neat just seeing the kids do that.
I remember growing up, I went to Mitchell Nielsen, and both Mitchell Nielsen Elementary and Primary are right there off of Jones Boulevard, and the fire department is literally right in front of the primary school.
Yes, I was Station 4.
That was one of the things every year, I think no matter what grade I was in, we went on a field trip by walking across the street to the fire department.
Yes, I remember that, yeah. Come in and take a tour of the station and put on our turnouts, just do different stuff like that, see the truck, yes.
Little kids, they look up to firemen, they look up to policemen as well, but they look up to the firemen, I think, more so because they're right there in their neighborhood. They see them more often in a lot of cases. It's different.
It is. Not saying anything bad about the police department, but a lot of times when they're dealing with the police department other than out in the public, just run into them, it's a bad situation to where somebody may be getting in trouble or they're in a situation that they're nervous about. But in the fire side, they're usually calling us for help. It's always for help. It's not because this person did this to me and they're needing help and they're glad to see us provide that help to them.
It's not a domestic situation where mom and dad got into a fight or anything like that. And most of the firemen I've met over my lifetime, most of them have, I don't know if they're trained in de-escalating situations or what, they seem to be fairly calm people.
Yes, and well, that's part of what it takes to be a firefighter, too. And yes, we do have some training from the beginning all up to now. I still take classes myself, but just in those subjects, yeah.
A couple more questions here from folks who texted in. We'll get to those in just a second. But the compassion that firemen have, that paramedics have, and you've got a lot of people who are paramedics working for the fire department. What level of care do you guys go to, and what are some of the situations that you run into when it comes to people needing medical aid?
Well, anything. You never know what you're going to come across. Sometimes it's an accident to where it's really an emergency. A lot of times it's just someone getting sick in their house. So when it's an accident, like a car wreck, you got to assess the patient and see what's going on. A lot of times when someone's ill, you go in the house, they already know what to tell you what's going on with them, or someone with them tells you what's going on. And we're trying to deal with every one of these situations. But yeah, we go from someone cutting their finger all the way to cardiac arrest, everything in between, you know, we run to it all.
One of the questions we got, and it came up whenever you were talking about new fire stations, and I know we've talked about this before, but it was about drone use and using drones to actually fight fires. Is that something that here in Murfreesboro you guys are looking at? I know you already have drones.
Yeah, we do have a drone team. We do not use it to fight fire. I know I have seen some AI videos where a drone going up with a hose and stuff like that. We do not use it for any kind of firefighting, but we do use it as a tool to assist us in that. We can deploy them real quick if, you know, on fire scenes to go up and get an aerial shot of a resident or an apartment building. You know, there are certain things you can look for to see what maybe the fire may be doing. We can use them on hazard material situation. We use them in search and rescue. There's so many things that drones bring to our department. That's a great option for us to use. Say in hazmat, you can send a drone down and see what you got, read the labels instead of maybe sending someone down, or if it's unclear through binoculars and all. on fire scenes, you know, you get that bird's eye view of what's going on to where you normally wouldn't. Search and rescue, it's got the infrared where you can spot someone in the dark. And, you know, we've went out and searched for people. We can use it, basically same thing, but on water rescues, we can check things out, go down the river and look for the person that we're, you know, looking for. So there's a lot of uses for it. Talking about when I started to now, things that have changed, you know, drones is one of those things. 25 years ago, you didn't think about having a drone in your department. Now we got three or four of them that we use pretty much on daily if we got something going on.
I think back to when I was in high school as an example. There is no way I would have ever imagined the capability of being able to fly what equates to a remote control helicopter or remote control airplane with the ability to actually view what you're flying over. You know, that was for helicopters only back
then. Yes. Technology, it's sometimes a little scary.
It is a little scary at times. Again, with us today from Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue, Chief McCluskey. Right now, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back, and we'll try to get to some of these questions in just a second. I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but we'll try to get to your question in just a minute.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. We really focus on value. They get value. They get more than what they pay for. They get a higher level service. They get higher level food at a price that is a lot more affordable. What we're trying to do is we're trying to give people the value, and again, that they were fulfilled both within their stomach and as well as their pockets. We want them to feel satisfied. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
South Central Bank has two CD specials that will help your money grow. South Central Bank has a 5-month CD with an annual percentage yield of 4.15% or a 25-month CD with an annual percentage yield of 3.8%. Two great ways to put your money to work. You choose the term that works best for you. $500 minimum balance to obtain the APY. Stop by any of our convenient South Central Bank locations today and take advantage of our two great rates. South Central Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Again, Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark McCluskey in studio with us this morning talking about Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue and some of the responses you guys go on a daily or nightly basis. One of the questions asked was about using information or data, I guess, from past calls and past incidents and using it towards the betterment of the fire department and the city in your response to things going on.
There's several things that we do that affect our response and have in place. One of the things we have, all of our equipment is tracked through an AVL, which is basically like a GPS system that our dispatch knows, not our actual dispatcher, but our dispatch computer system knows. When there's a call comes in, they know what truck is closer, and it'll automatically send that truck. You know, there's code words when people come call in through our software system. You know, if someone says, I'm having a heart attack, or someone's not breathing, there's words that the system picks up, and it knows what it needs to send, and it automatically generates that call. Then our dispatcher is taking additional information that is sent out to us through our MDTs where we can read it on our screen and stuff like that. I won't say we have a community connect that the community can input information about their house or residence to where when they dial 911 at that address that we're coming to, you can enter information that would be like, hey, I have a bedridden person upstairs, or I have a storm shelter in my garage, you know, I have a someone that it's maybe on a ventilator in my house that requires electricity all the time. Just little things like that. So it will come up on our screen when we're responding. We kind of know what we're getting into before we just get there and find out on the scene. So in, like the storm shelter, you know, if we know that you have that, because it could be covered up and it may be days before someone says, oh, they may be in their storm shelter. Well, if we know that going to the call, we're going to look for this storm shelter and try to find it, you know, because a lot of times people put them in garages, stuff may fall in, you don't know they're there. So we have that technology, you know, that helps us, you know, far as responding. I'm not sure if I actually answered the question how they wanted to, but there's also other stuff that we're looking into. We used to have a system that's kind of outdated and we're looking at more, but it's a preamp system that works off our trucks. It helps us respond faster by changing red lights, controlling different incidents like that, maybe rerouting us because of construction going on in that area. It's a lot of different components that go into this software that dispatches us and our response.
I know we only have like 20 seconds left, okay, but when a phone call comes in, does it come up on the computer for dispatch? Past calls here have been such and
yes,
such.
Yes, we track that. It's entered into a computer. Say if we have several of the same calls, if PD's been to this house before that we're going to, and it has a history of someone being violent, lets us know, and that also automatically sends a police officer and may create us to have to stage or anything like that.
Sure, that's helpful. Again, with us this morning, Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Department Chief Mark McCleskey. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Scott, good talk this morning.
Fresh cut greens and oven warm bread, jars of sweet jam will be red. Good food, good folks, flavors that shine from winter's chill. Spring sunshine. Every Friday, feel the spark. Rutherford County Market at Lane Agri Park.
Local farmers with local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market every Friday through April.
You'll find it there from frost to boneless seas and sing. So bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
At the Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro.